1330 WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's talk radio.
From Saigon, this is the American Forces Vietnam Network, presenting Million Dollar Music for the Aquarian Age.
3.4 million Americans served in Vietnam and the surrounding theater during the war. Some volunteered, some were drafted. They came from all 50 states. They were different races, different religions. They liked different sports teams. But there were two things that every serviceman shared. They wore the uniform of the United States military, and they listened to the American Forces Vietnam Network on the radio. This broadcast on 1330 AM WEBY tells the real story of radio in Vietnam. Join us as we honor our Vietnam veterans and share the untold story of the American Forces Vietnam Network and those who served.
AFBN Audio 85.
Da Nang.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Marine Sergeant Harry Simons was stationed at both AFBN Saigon and AFBN Da Nang from 1967 through 1969. He provided WEBY with many hours of studio tape recordings of his rock and roll music programs, as well as those of other AFBN personalities. These have not been heard since they were originally broadcast in Vietnam nearly 50 years ago.
AFBN worldwide news coverage, heard every hour on the hour.
For the Americans in the rice paddies, jungles, military bases, hospitals, and cities of Southeast Asia, AFBN was there. Even in the skies and on the sea, all it took was a turn of a knob, and the sounds of war were replaced with the sounds of home.
AFBN Channel 56.
Play who?
Chicken!
This is not a typical documentary about the Vietnam War. This is not about the sound of helicopters or machine guns or explosions. This isn't about the sound of the war itself. It's about the soundtrack of the war. AFBN was heard everywhere. On bases, in hooches, in trucks, aboard ships, in cockpits, and even in the fields of battle. Wherever Americans were, AFBN accompanied them. AFBN was a universal element of the Vietnam experience as it delivered the critical sounds of home to the men and women who were thousands of miles from home. This is that story. This is AFBN, the GI's Companion. This special tribute program is proudly sponsored by Gulf Power, Penn Air Federal Credit Union, The Retirement Planners, Milton Dodge, and Joe Patty Seafood.
AFBN Channel
90. Hi, love. Welcome once again to Another Date with Chris, and this is Chris Noel doing the welcoming.
You've heard the music often. It's what's between the music that is so unique. So we have shortened the songs to fit more of the AFBN programs into this documentary. Let's now turn back the calendar. Let's now go halfway around the world. Let's now listen to the American Forces Vietnam Network.
A new Audio 85 and Harry Simons happens with...
Good evening to you. 905 from Boss Radio. Marine Corporal Harry Simons going to light the fires of I Corps for the next 55 minutes from the American Forces Vietnam Network. In 1966, a stateside souvenir by Billy Joe Royal. And everything's turning blue, honey.
Everything turned blue. Everything turned blue. Since you said we are through. Yes, the sun. Thank you.
Power of Music from the Big 8-5. I think it's about time to buy a couple of tickets to L.A., don't you? Here's Jose Feliciano on the American Forces Vietnam Network. Hitchcock Railway.
2-3 tickets to L.A. One round trip the other way. I'll make my bed where a feather falls. I start to move when forever gone. I go insane on that train.
Big Jose and the Big 85, 809-6337. Get those cards and letters in today because we play what you say on Boss Radio.
Here I am, home from hot day and jungle. Where is my wife? She bring me food, slippers, pipe, smoking jacket. Wife Jane, your husband is home.
Okay, crazy tonsils. I heard you the first time.
Me Tarzan, you Jane.
I hear that 20 times a day. Listen, before you start on your trials and tribulations keeping the natives from getting restless, I got something to tell you.
Me Tarzan, you Jane.
I'm button your lip muscles. They're having a contest at the Freedom Hill, USO, and I want you to enter me. It's a sweetheart photo contest. And all you do is submit a picture of your girlfriend or your wife. Then they have a drawing, and you can win some flowers or a beautiful blow-up portrait of your lovey-dovey. I just send in my picture, and I could indubitably win.
It doesn't, you're Jane.
Well, you cut that stuff. You've been watching too much television. Get Cheetah to take my picture over to Freedom Hill, USO, and do it now.
Come, Cheetah, you take picture of Jane to Freedom Hill, USO. She win contest. You go now.
Well, actually, I'd rather not. I'm expecting guests for tea.
Righto, here's how you can enter your sweetheart in the contest. Just mail one photo of your with your full military address on the reverse side to Freedom Hill USO, 1st Marine Division, Da Nang, FPO 96602. Now, you can enter your wife, fiancé, girlfriend, the girl next door, or even your mother-in-law, if you like, and who doesn't want to do that? And all the photographies will be sent back to you after the contest ends. Now, if you like, you can bring the photo down to the Freedom Hill USO in person, and the winners will be notified that their photo has won a prize. So, spread the word to your buddy, and you might just win a surprise Valentine's Day gift for your favorite girlfriend here back in the States. Stateside souvenir from Jay and the Americans. This magic moment.
This magic moment. So different and so new, as like any other. Until I kissed you.
This magic moment on the Big 8-5.
This is the Miss Berry Go with Radio Go Go. Swinging BN Radio Rock.
Rocking around the clock on a carousel on the Hollies from 1966 on Boss Radio. ABO 96337, drawer 40. We play what you say.
Riding along on a carousel. Trying to catch up to you. Riding along on a carousel. Will I catch up to you?
Simon's lighting the fires of I-Corps for a fantabulous Wednesday evening for a happening 29 January 1969.
a pet, then you should be familiar with the services provided by the Army Veterinary Detachments to safeguard your pet, yourself, and those around your pet. Pet dogs, cats, monkeys, and similar animals should receive their first distemper inoculation when they are between 8 and 10 weeks old. The first rabies inoculation should be given when your pet is 3 months old. Both inoculations should be repeated annually. If you have a pet monkey, your area Army Veterinary Detachment also provides tuberculosis tests for your pet. This test should be given on an annual basis also. Take care of your pet by being sure he's taken annually to the area Army Veterinary Detachment.
What's with the pet monkey, Harry? Did people really have pet monkeys over there?
Oh, yes, they did. As a matter of fact, we had a pet monkey at AFEN in Da Nang. His name was Peaches. And remember now, we were on Monkey Mountain. So I bet Peaches felt right at home. Captain Pitt, our commanding officer, took care of Peaches mostly, but we all did our part. He was a fun companion to have around.
The Medical Corps plays a vital role in any military conflict. Kathy Perrine served as a nurse in Vietnam. What years did you serve in the United States Army, Kathy?
In 1966 and 1967. I actually went in at the end of 65 and served through 67. I went to a three-year nursing school, and they recruited me into an Army nurse program. We were paid as a private for about 8 to 9 months, and then we were obligated for 2 years military duty, or 3 years military duty.
So upon graduation from nursing school, you received your commission into the Army?
Yes. As soon as we passed, we had to pass your state boards. So it was about a six-week window that we were just hanging around. And then once we got word that we passed our state boards, we reported for duty at Fort Sam Houston and learned to be a good little soldier.
How long after Fort Sam Houston were you sent to Vietnam?
My first duty station was actually Walter Reed Army Hospital. So I went to Walter Reed, and I thought, I think I'll volunteer for Vietnam.
Where were you stationed in country?
I was stationed in Quy Nhon. It's down on the coast. It's really a beautiful area. The beaches are lovely. And when we first went there, we were billeted in, it used to be Madame Nu's Palace. It to us, it would have looked like a shanty, but to them, it was wonderful. So we spent a couple weeks there, and then they made us billets. I never actually had to sleep in a tent.
Were they illnesses or injuries?
We had both. We were in the 67th it was an evacuation hospital, and the military has many designations. An evacuation hospital is a 400-bed hospital. So we had medical wards, and we had surgical wards and intensive care units. Most of ours were in Quonset huts. And then they made us a building. We had a beautiful concrete building that they made for us. And we had malaria wards, because many of the men, even if they took their malaria pill, still contracted malaria. And a lot of them didn't like taking it because they made them ill. And if you're out in the field, it's not nice to be ill. So a lot of times they would skip the pill and then end up with malaria.
Were all the nurses at that hospital Army nurses?
Yes. We were an Army facility. Occasionally, some of the Korean nurses would come over and visit. I think they would actually just come over to see how we did things. So we did interact with other nurses, but we were all Army.
Kathy, do you recall listening to AFBN yourself while in country?
I had to, because it was the only thing we had.
Were there radios in the hospitals that the patients could listen to?
I don't remember the actual radio, but I know they had it because we listened to the music all the time.
When you would go out to the beach to relax, did you bring a radio with you? Was that part of the relaxation, the music from home?
Well, actually, I went out to the beach to catch a little bit of sleep because it was so hot in the Hooches. But some of the people on the beach that were relaxing did have radios, and yes, we did listen to them.
Do you have a favorite memory of Vietnam?
Oh, I have several. one of mine is, you know, as an Army nurse, you're responsible for a lot of patients, and I was on an orthopedic ward, and if we were going to send the patients back stateside, the Air Force was responsible for transporting patients out of country into either Japan or states. And so to prepare them for shipment, if they had a bad injury, they were often put in these full-body casts from their chest on down. It was called a spica cast. And I had one patient who we shipped off. He was so excited because he was going home, and he was being shipped off to the casting ward, and he didn't come back. It's almost change of shift, and I have lost a patient. He's gone. I can't find him anywhere. I sent my corpsman out. They couldn't find him. Oh, maybe 40 minutes later, they found he and several of his ambulatory buddies. They had taken him off the stretcher, and they had propped him up so they could take pictures of him to send back to his wife to show. At the time, it was a commercial, Look Ma, No Cavities. I think it was for a toothpaste. They had propped this man up, ruined all the work we had done. He almost missed his flight because he had to go back and have it all taken off and redone. And they had propped him up. I don't know how they ever got him off the gurney. They had propped him up to take this picture of Look Ma, No Cavities. And now I laugh about it. I was scared then. I thought we were going to have a major catastrophe, but I didn't get in as much trouble as I should have for losing a patient. So that's one.
Lieutenant Kathy Perrine, thank you for your service.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
With your brother, Mercy.
Mercy, Mercy.
That's the Ohio Express. 96337 in the city is a happening from Boss Radio.
If you've never had an accident in your life, try driving downtown. The narrow city streets are often overcrowded with bicycles, pedicabs, and pedestrians. Driving, to say the least, is extremely difficult. It's not quite as nerve-wracking, however, if a bit of defensive driving is employed. Try to foresee the actions of others. Once you see the hazard and understand your defense, be ready to act in time. Never wait. That's defensive driving. It's a good habit to follow. Practice defensive driving. It's easy, and you may save a few lives.
You ought to be kind of defensive yourself there, Chucky. What do you tell your girl, anyway? I got a heartache for you?
No.
Well, that wouldn't work out too good. Flirtation. But a heartache. Flirty sounds of the flirtation. Pour it on, man. We want to thank Bill Rongstead out front in the weather department for this very, very precise weather cast he just brought in here for me to read. I'll read it verbatim to you. I may get fired, but if you want to know the weather, look out the damn window. Hear the latest skinny about Boston, huh? Bob Kennedy at WBZ is selling used cars. That's what I'll be doing, too. Wow.
I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you about my town. I'm going to tell you a big, fat story, baby. I was all about my town. Yeah, down by the river. Down by the banks of the River Charles.
you selling the used cars, huh?
Yeah.
I wonder what they have me doing. Cleaning out the river?
Well, I love
in the city, and if you like the twang of the guitars, the mellow tone of a sax, and the grateful applause of an appreciative audience, maybe girls are your groove. Well, anyway, you'll be interested in the informal jam sessions now being held at the China Beach USO every Friday afternoon from 12 to 1500 hours. Now, new instruments have been purchased for these jam sessions, and all you do is supply the talent, but not the 30th of May, because they got a special thing going down there. So if playing an instrument is your groove, come on down to the China Beach USO Friday afternoon and do your thing.
Sounds like fun.
The old Pelvis is back. Elvis himself.
As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a boy and his mama cries. 'Cause if there's one thing she don't need, it's another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto. And his mama cries.
In the Ghetto, Elvis Presley hit band on the All-American Power Pole playlist from Boss Radio. Hey, it's getting hot in here. Young lady, will you please stop blowing in my ear?
The radio is a groovy thing. It's fun. It's fun. It's the fun one.
Bet you can't name one good thing about radio.
Well, my wife never cooks frozen radio dinners.
Bet you can't name two good things.
Well, it don't have reruns nor rabbit ears.
Bet you can't name three.
I can always get the sports results, because my wife can't wrap the garbage up in it.
I'll bet you can't name one good thing about television.
Oh, yes, I can. The audio, of course.
Get to listen to the Joe Roland Spineless Program at 8:05 in the morning.
And now it's time once more for Joe Spine in the Backbone Hour. And he... Hi, folks, this is Joe Spine, and we're talking to Homer Quimby, the only person in the world who has absolutely no complexes. Mr. Quimby, how is it you have no complexes?
You are under my power. It is the power of love.
Eyes that hypnotize, and all it takes is just one glance, just one look at him, puts me in a lover's trance. Now listen.
'67 and the Marvelettes. Keep on going.
Hey, my baby must be a magician. Coffee sure got the magic touch.
9:55 in the city.
A-S-E-N-Hits. Keep happening.
This girl is getting me very, very frustrated with her thing because she won't suck it to me. The Isley Brothers, it's your thing. Do what you want to do. I don't care. Get out of here.
It's your thing. Do what you want to do.
Piano-playing grandfather and everybody born before him. Truck stop. That's another Go Radio program, phase number two, happening from Boss Radio. Big 8-5.
About 1,000 people worked at AFVN throughout the entire conflict in Vietnam. But they came and they went. Typically doing a show for 1 year, or occasionally a little more if they extended their tours. But there was a voice on AFVN whose show was on the air from 1966 to 1973, and every GI remembers her. She was a Hollywood sweetheart by the name of Chris Noel. Chris Noel, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
You played a huge role in the American Forces Vietnam Network in Vietnam. Vietnam veterans repeatedly say that they remember Chris Noel, that you were a big part of the experience in Vietnam. What'd you do?
Well, first of all, I'm always glad that they remember me. And actually, I became the first woman since World War II to broadcast on Armed Forces Radio and have my own show. They interviewed a lot of girls in Hollywood, and I think I was kind of flabbergasted when I found out that that I was going to be on the radio. And I started out with George Church III. And I did a show with him called Small World. That's how I started it. And then one day I get a call to go into the colonel's office. So I go in and he tells me I've been fired. And I said, well, what did I do? And he looked at me and he says, well, you've been fired and rehired to have your own show, which was pretty exciting. And they decided to call it A Date with Chris. And about that time, Elvis had his album out called A Date with Elvis. And so I started with my own show. And it was lots of fun. I had help. I had a producer. And it was very helpful because he would pull a lot of the records. Until as time went on, I found myself getting upset because I would want certain records played and they refused to play them. We had quite a band at that time. And for example, along came Mary and they said I couldn't play it. And I go, what are you talking about? And they said, well, Mary means Mary Jane and that means marijuana. You can't play that song. And there were a lot of songs like that they wouldn't let me play. So I hear people say there was no such thing as censorship. Well, that's not true.
Chris, your program, A Date with Chris, was aired on AFRTS worldwide, right? Not just in Vietnam.
That's correct. Throughout the free world.
Was your program produced in Los Angeles and then distributed worldwide?
Yes, it was.
Had you been to Vietnam prior to getting your program, A Date with Chris, on AFRTS?
No, I had never gone anywhere outside of the country except to Mexico once.
You had a very personal connection with the GIs in Vietnam. They listened to you, and it was a very, very deeply personal moment. How did you create that intimacy?
Well, I always pretended like somebody was right there with me, and I would talk to them like they were right there with me. If I made dedications to the guys, I'd make my dedication and talk to him just like he was sitting right next to me.
Well, I hope this doesn't come across as chauvinist, but you're absolutely adorable, and you've got an incredibly seductive voice. That had to help.
At that time, I was smoking, and so it was a little bit more like this. From all the smoking I was doing. It was a lot lower.
Chris, what was the original purpose behind your radio program?
Well, Armed Forces Radio comes up underneath the Department of Defense. And it's under, I think, Special Services. It's and the whole concept is that we are supposed to be bringing knowledge and the feeling of warmth and education to the troops. That's why they would throw in little blips about making sure you're taking your malaria pill, don't come home with weapons, various little bits that would be pre-taped and thrown into the shows. But anyway, there was a real purpose for it. Keeping up the morale in war is a very hard thing to do. And at that time, the thing that seemed to grab them the most was actually to be able to hear a female's voice, an American's voice. I think I could have been 7 feet tall and weighed 500 pounds, and they wouldn't have cared. They just were just happy to hear a female voice, because on the radio was nothing but men. And most of the time, the weather today is the same as it was yesterday, and the day before, and last week. And it was pretty stilted, most of it. So for them to hear somebody on the airwaves taking it in a different way, putting it out with friendliness, really made a difference.
Chris, you obviously had a positive impact on the morale of the American forces, so much so that the Viet Cong wanted you, a radio announcer, a Hollywood actress, dead. They actually put a bounty on your life. How much was that bounty?
It was only $10,000.
That's pretty significant.
Well, back then it was. That was a lot of money back then. For a Vietnamese person to have ended up with $10,000 would make them very wealthy.
Well, it's also pretty significant when you consider that General Westmoreland and Bob Hope had a $25,000 bounty. That's still a pretty good percentage that you had.
Yes, it is.
Why do you suppose they wanted you dead?
Because they was good at what I did. I was important to the United States fighting man. I gave them energy and hope and positive feelings, and when they were in hopelessness and feeling despair and in a place that they didn't want to be in some of the places they couldn't even pronounce.
Chris, I read your book titled Vietnam and Me, and you have a couple of stories in there I'd like to address. Tell us, please, about the situation with the POWs who heard your program on the radio and how it gave them hope.
A Special Forces Green Beret brother, John Gallagher, from Brooklyn, New York, was captured along with the rest of his team. Since it was the first entire A-team captured by the VC, the enemy wanted to use them as an example. The VC kept the 7 white men, 1 Indian, 1 black man, and 3 Latinos in separate 8-foot holes. They had to go to the bathroom, fight off the rats, and sleep in the mud from the rain in a hole that didn't even have enough room for them to lie down. Through the steel lid that covered his hole, John Gallagher could hear the VC's radio. John told me later, every day your voice would come on the radio and I could hear the music. How bizarre to hear a round-eyed American woman's voice on a VC radio inside Cambodia. You made us realize we still had a chance of making it out alive. When I asked him why, he said, because we knew Americans were still there and weren't going to forget about us. We knew they would do something. We knew that we weren't forgotten. Just hearing your voice gave us hope. The biggest thing is you still made us feel a part of home. Knowing that made us want to stay alive. I heard that sexy voice and knew that one day I had to meet this woman. We had never seen you, but we dreamed of you as blonde and blue-eyed until the day 7 of us escaped.
So you played a big role in just keeping them going, giving them hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just those who were incarcerated. You also tell the story about a photo store in New York years later.
Oh, yeah. I had gone and I needed to have some copies of pictures made for something. And I left them there and I went out and did something and then came back to pick them up. And I remember that the man, the clerk at the photo store, he just kept staring at me. And I didn't think much about it because, you know, like in New York City, there's all kinds of people. And when he was giving me my change, he mumbled something that was like, thank you for saving my friend's life. And I looked up at him and I said, what friend? He says, my very best friend was in Vietnam. When he came back, all he talked about was you. He says, I didn't know who you were, but all he talked about was how, if it weren't for you and your radio show and being able to listen to your voice, that he would have killed himself. And that was not the first time I heard something like that.
Dick Orkin, the creator of Chicken Man, told a similar tale about that radio series, Keeping GIs Alive.
Well, yeah, because it does. You give them something that takes them out of their head. It's something else to think about. I mean, it's pretty horrible sitting there wondering when you know you're in a VC area and you don't have the foggiest idea when someone's going to come out of the bush behind you and slit your throat. And we never knew who the enemy was. In the daytime, the women would be washing your clothes and everyone would be smiling at the GI. And then they'd have it all paced off and knew how many feet it took to get to whatever place they wanted to get inside camp. And they would come in at nighttime and kill our GIs.
It was hell, no doubt.
I think war is hell.
Chris, you visited Vietnam by way of the radio 5 nights a week. How often did you visit in person?
Well, I know for a fact it was at least 8 times. And it was more, but because I never kept a calendar, I wouldn't have the foggiest idea.
You didn't stay in the rear with the gear either. You took your show to the forward operating bases. What was your most harrowing experience in Vietnam?
We always had a Christmas truce. I guess it was 24 hours. Neither side was supposed to fire. Well, we didn't, but that didn't stop the other side. Very early in the morning, right at daybreak, all of a sudden I hear all this noise. And I rolled out of this cot and laid on the floor. And I grabbed my clothes, and lying on the floor, I put my clothes on, and I slipped out. Again, I had no idea where I was. And that's when they told me the truce had just been broken. They were back to firing. But since I didn't know what was going on, I thought we were being fired at that moment. Well, we probably were, but, you know, it was just very, very weird. And then other things happened, little things, you know, like being in a place that definitely was being fired on and incoming, and being in a Jeep and being fired on by snipers, and pretty much thrown out of the Jeep into a ditch, and being in a helicopter and having it being shot at, being on top of a mountain. I don't know what mountain I was on top of, and having the helicopter come in to pick me up, and it was very dark, and flares are going off, and you could hear the ping on the helicopter as I get behind some, like a bunker, and hug it until it's time, and then they just picked me up and threw me on the helicopter, and having a hydraulic system go out on a helicopter when you're up in the air, and end up landing in a rice field next to a suspected BC village, and just having all kinds of little stuff like that happen that just kind of seemed like the norm.
Chris, did you receive letters from GIs in Vietnam at the time?
Yes, actually, I received thousands.
What was the typical letter? What did it say?
Well, actually, I happen to have this letter right in front of me. It came from 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, Headquarters Supply Company, 2S4. Dear Miss Noel, today, 19th of March, could be the last day for most of us. We're going to make a beach landing in a pretty rough spot in Vietnam. When you receive this letter, I'll probably be gone from this crummy world. I just want to say that listening to your beautiful voice on radio gives us Marines a big lift. It's just too bad that most people back home don't give a damn what happens to us or the outcome of this war. They just keep on protesting and criticizing, but give no encouragement or support. They don't know that us Marines are afraid and want to live like others. I'm just an ordinary young man, not old enough to drink or vote. I've always been a great admirer of you and was hoping and wishing that I would be able to meet you in person someday. But for reasons now, I can't plan that far ahead. Best wishes.
Well, Chris, I know you were not a member of the armed services, but in many ways, you are a Vietnam veteran. And I want to thank you for what you did.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate it, but I just felt I did what I was supposed to do.
Hi, love. Welcome once again to Another Date with Chris. This is Chris Noel, and our first song for today is by Andy Kim, Shoot 'em Up, Baby.
Girl, I love you, you know I do, and I do not doubt that you love me too. But you're so young, your life's just begun. Something tells me there'll come a day when you just might wonder what slipped away while you've been with me. And you will want to be free.
Underground radio in the big cities is becoming a quite a big thing. What they're doing is they're playing a lot of album cuts and singles of new people that probably haven't made it on the charts and may never make it, even though they're very talented, but they've got something to say in their records, or they just happen to be a fantastic group or whatever it is. And it's really kind of wild because Big Brother and the Holding Company, you probably have read about them in so many of the major magazines, and yet probably haven't even heard any of their music, because until just recently it hasn't been selling, but they have been played so much on the underground stations that it's really unreal when you think about it. And Big Brother herself is something else. You should see her. She's really unreal, and she's going to sing for you now, Peace of My Heart.
Honey, you know I did. But each time I tell myself that when I think of it enough, I want to show you, baby, that a woman can be tough. I want you to come on, come on, come on, come on, take it. Another little piece of my heart now, baby. Take another little bit of my heart now.
Joe writes, he's with the 560th General Supply Company in Da Nang. He says, you always play records for short-timers. How about playing a record for the long-timers from Western Pennsylvania? Joe is from Pittsburgh. All right, I'm going to do that right now. And also for your buddies PFC John and PFC Dan. And, oh, I'm so happy that you didn't forget Spec 5 Langworthy, who is a short-timer. Here's Pat Clark and Don't Give Up.
When love seems to let you down, when you can't turn around and run, you've got to stop, face the fact that the heartaches have just begun. Because you need love, you need love. Keep on till you know that you won. Yeah.
Bill Medley now, and I'd like to dedicate this to a fellow who's in Khantoum. As he says, still PFC Martin, but the boys all call me Chief. I bet you're a lifer and you're on your way to becoming a general one of these days, huh, Martin? He says, play a song for the cool captain of A Company, 1st of the 14th Infantry, 4th Infantry Division. All right, Chief, here's Brown Eyed Woman.
You look at me And baby, all you see are my blue eyes. I'm not a man, baby, all I am is what I see.
Of the major magazines that Janis Joplin of Big Brother and the Holding Company is the undisputed queen of pop. And probably the male that you could say is the king of pop would, well, I guess the honors would go to Jim Morrison of the Doors. And here he is with Hello, I Love You. Butler now, and I'd like to dedicate this song to Spec 4 Bobby and the guys of the 4th MP Company, 4th Infantry Division at Pleiku. Hey, Western Union man. Let me give you my address right now, okay? I realize that I haven't given you time probably to get your pen or pencil in hand, but I'll give it to you anyway. Chris Noel, care of AFRS, Hollywood, California, zip code 90038. Did you get that? Chris Noel, C-H-R-I-S-N-O-E-L, just like Christmas, that's easy to remember. Care of AFRS, Hollywood, California, zip code 90038. I have a letter here from a girl that's stationed with her husband in Gusen, Germany, and she asked if I would play a song for her father, who was pulling his second tour in Vietnam. His name is Staff Sergeant James. He's with A Troop, 1st Squadron, 4th Cav, 1st Infantry Division. So, James, I'll call you Jimmy. How's that? Here's a song that was a big hit by Joe Simon. It was written by him. Now by the Vanilla Fudge, You Keep Me Hanging On. have the Moody Blues, and this song goes out to a fella that's on the armored troop carrier. Let's see, which one is it? I guess it's ATC-1526 in the Mekong Delta. And for everyone that's in the boat crew, especially for Petty, Ride My Seesaw. A letter from Spec 5 Smith, who was with the 7th PSYOP group near Camp Casey in Korea. And he says that there are four of us that listen to you regularly, Jerry, Tony, PA, and Quack. And he asked if I would do him a personal favor and say hello to Spec 5 Lyles, who is somewhere in Vietnam, and he hasn't seen him in over a year. I'll do more than that for you. I'll even play a song for you, your buddy Smith, and Johnny, and all the rest of you guys that are in Korea, by the Masqueraders. I Ain't Got to Love Nobody Else. Song goes out to Spec 4 Russell and the men of Futai and Quinyan ROK detachments of Long Lines North Quinyan area, Wichita linemen.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road. Searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire.
They say that man's best friend and man's worst enemy is fire. On land, on sea, and in the air, guard against fires, will you? And don't forget, I'll be back again tomorrow. Till then, bye, love. The United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
This is AFVN, the GI's Companion. A special presentation of 1330 WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This tribute to our Vietnam veterans is proudly sponsored by Joe Patty Seafood, Gulf Power, the Retirement Planners, Penn Air Federal Credit Union, and Milton Dodge. Norm LaFontaine was a big fan of AFVN radio, and he spent a lot of time in the skies over Vietnam listening to it. Norm, thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here, Mike.
Norm, what years did you serve in the Marine Corps?
From September of 65 to November of 69.
And how many of those were in Vietnam?
Most of 68 and 69.
What'd you do there?
Well, I was a helicopter crew chief, and of course they'd argue that I did as little as possible for as long as I could, but not quite so.
What were your responsibilities as crew chief?
Well, I was considered to be the master mechanic of that particular aircraft, and once in the air, I basically coordinated everything that had to be done with the crew, and I only had one guy to look out for. He was my gunner, and we just paid attention to the pilots. But besides being the main mechanic on it, I was also the starboard side door gunner on a Huey gunship.
What type of missions did you fly in that Huey?
Well, the Huey gunship mission was to escort other helicopters. So if we took off in the morning, we never knew whether we were going to be escorting a medevac or a resupply or, you know, basically anything you could use a helicopter for. We were the guys that, you know, went alongside of them to make sure if they got shot at, we could, you know, we could respond and get those guys out of the LZ before something happened to them.
Where were you based out of in Vietnam?
Mostly Marble Mountain, which was about 3.5 miles due east of Da Nang on the South China Sea.
I know the NVA had positions on Marble Mountain. Was that prior to you getting there, afterwards, or simultaneous?
All of the above. They were there first, and they were there long after we left.
How did the mission of the Marine Hueys differ from the mission of the Army Hueys?
Well, the Marine Hueys were used mostly for gunships, and we also had a VIP mission. If you wanted to, you know, you wanted to haul a VIP, say a general or whatever, we used what we call a slick. And the slick was just basically a stripped-down Huey. It was a pilot and crew chief that flew it. Most of the time, the crew chief was the co-pilot. And our Hueys were different than the Army's in the fact that they had larger, more powerful Hueys. And the models that we flew just didn't lend themselves to troop transport. And it was they could haul just enough to be an effective little gunship. And the Army had a different strategy, too, as far as hauling and putting in troops. The Marine Corps liked to get a lot more guys in one shot in one helicopter than the Army did. They had a lot more helicopters with troops. So it was just a lot of different strategies. But the Huey that I was a crew chief on, we just had the gun mission, and we used the slick for just one-man medevacs and things like this.
Norm, do you remember listening to AFVN when you were in Vietnam?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, if we had a transistor radio, we had it on the flight line. We listened to stateside songs while we were working on the aircraft. And if you were in helicopters in Vietnam, you knew that if your helicopter had an ADF radio, which is automatic direction finder, the ADF homed in on AM radio station. And we would just dial in, I guess it was 8:50 AM. And that was the frequency for AFVN radio out of Monkey Mountain. So when we were airborne, we were just, crew chief would dial the ADF radio to AFVN radio. And if we weren't getting a zone brief, we just hit the switch on the ICS box, and the whole crew, we'd be flying along, grooving to AFVN tunes from the States. And it's like going to the beach in your convertible, man. You got to have tunes.
And that music didn't get in the way of the mission in any way?
No, because you had to get there, you had to get back. And not only that, but a lot of people didn't know it, but it was a motivating factor that you're out there in a night medevac and it's raining like crazy and the wind's blowing the cold rain in on you and everything else. And so I'd dial in AFVN, and, you know, one night we're out there in the rain, it was pretty miserable, and I flipped the switch, and here comes Sam and Dave, man. Hold on, I'm coming. And it was a night medevac. It was just, you know, really appropriate. We're coming for you, man. Two pilots, two gunners in the back, and we're just, you know, getting on to Sam and Dave, and hold on, I'm coming. And there was a couple other ones, but that always stuck in my mind.
How many people were on board that helo at one time?
there was only four of us. There was pilot, co-pilot, and crew chief and gunner.
So would the four of you be singing along? I mean, I'm picturing you in this convertible driving down the beach with the radio cranked and all of you singing at the top of your lungs and having a good time. Is that an accurate picture in my mind?
Sometimes it was. I'm sitting in the back seat on the starboard side, the right side, behind the pilot, and the gunner's sitting in the back on, you know, behind the co-pilot, and there'd be four of us. And you look forward, and I flip on some tunes or something, and we'd be going in, getting ready for a gun run, and you see the pilots rocking in the seat. We did the job, but we figured it didn't have to be all that bad. We got music. Eh, we'll listen to it. It's a little motivating, you know.
Did you listen to the radio in your downtime at all?
Oh, absolutely. Every hooch, somebody had a transistor. And at Marble Mountain, we were like about 3 miles away in a vast open flatland. So the broadcast, you know, we had no, there was nothing to stop the broadcast. So I would turn on the AM radio, you know, on the transistor, and we'd listen to AFVN all day like it was right there.
Well, as long as you were south of Monkey Mountain, you pretty much had it, because at 8:50 a.m., and the tower was actually not on Monkey Mountain, the studios were, but the tower was south of Monkey Mountain, but it covered Da Nang like a blanket.
Oh, yeah, all of China Beach, all the way down to Hoi An, and even further, probably.
How do you think your Vietnam experience would have been different if you didn't have AFVN music radio accompanying you?
Well, it would have been totally alien to us. Because, first of all, you're in a place halfway around the world, and your whole, you know, you're pretty much, if you're not out in the bush or if you're not in a helicopter, you're on a confined base, and it's pretty monotonous day after day, same sights, same smells, and the radio, especially, you know, AFVN being the only one there playing stateside music. It was a connection to home. Not only that, but not every song they played was just released today or yesterday. They played back. You'd have downtime where you'd have the radio on, and you'd hear songs that you went to high school. They play a song, and I don't know about anybody else, but you know, I relate a lot of stuff in my life to what was on the radio, what the song was at the time. So in Vietnam, you hear a song, and you can relate to something that you were doing. It was a happier, better time, something you had fun doing previous to that. The music was a very big part.
Norm, what years were you in Da Nang?
68 and 69.
So you would have been there simultaneously, the same time that Harry Simons, a.k.a. your brother, was doing the Go Show on AFVN.
Absolutely.
Out of Da Nang. Do you remember listening to him?
Yes. No matter where I was, I had a radio on. If I was sitting on a flight line working on the bird, I had the radio there.
Do you remember listening to Chicken Man on the radio?
Absolutely, man. I used to have baka, 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 right down to a science, and he's everywhere. It was popular. You heard it everywhere.
And what about Chris Noel? Do you remember listening to A Date with Chris?
I do. She was our gal. She was a morale builder, and that's why, you know, that's why the NVA were after her and put a bounty on her head. She was a morale builder for us.
Norm LaFontaine, thank you for your service.
Well, you're quite welcome, but I didn't do anything anybody else didn't.
Well, before you go, Norm, I want to dedicate this song to you and the crews of HML 167 Marine Helicopter Squadron. This is Sam and Dave. Not all who helped keep morale up were Americans, and not all set foot in Vietnam.
Some were just friends who wrote letters to U.S. military personnel. Lynn Watkinson is a young lady, at least in 1969 she was, a young lady out of Yorkshire, England, who was a pen pal with American servicemen in Vietnam. And I contacted her via mail and located her and asked her to participate in this documentary. And I am thrilled that we were able to make contact. Lynn Watkinson, welcome.
Hello, Mike. It's so wonderful to talk to you.
Lynn, why did you want to be a pen pal with American servicemen? You're British.
I know, but I started off writing to British soldiers, which was interesting, and I got loads of photographs and different things. And then it just sort of, when we heard the article, we saw the article, I thought, well, American, that would be even more interesting, especially with it being in Vietnam, which was an exotic country. And I was only sort of 18 at the time. And it just seemed exciting. And I've always pen palled from the age of 11. And I did have American pen friends when I was 11.
It was an article that was printed in your newspaper that suggested that perhaps you could be pen pals with GIs in Vietnam. Is that correct?
I think it must have been in our local paper, the Sheffield Star. And it was actually my mum that saw the story and encouraged me to write.
The United Kingdom did not send forces to Vietnam, so the involvement that you had was completely just a citizen of the UK who wanted to be a pen pal, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yes. And it's been a wonderful part of my life. I wouldn't have missed it for anything.
Do you remember how you submitted your name and address to get on a list of available pen pals?
Well, it must have been by letter. I must have written a letter to the address that I saw and just said that I would love to be a pen pal if anybody would like to write to me, thinking that I would probably get one or two replies if I was lucky. And it was, oh gosh, there was so much mail. It was unbelievable.
How many servicemen do you think wrote to you?
Oh gosh, it's hard to say. I mean, it was such a number to answer the letters with the old Remington typewriter. You could buy the one-page air letters, and we made sure that we answered every letter.
And you answered every one?
Every one, yeah.
What was the typical content of those letters from the servicemen in Vietnam?
Well, of course, and I think they just wanted the reassurance of feeling normal. It was just really a relief from the horrors of war, I suppose. They love to talk about the home life and the family and the lovely places in America to visit, which I was keen to hear about. They were so homesick, yeah. It's such a long, long way from home.
Did the servicemen write to you as a narrative of what they were doing in Vietnam, or was it more of a personal, emotional nature about what they were thinking?
I think I would say more a personal, emotional thing. They did tell me bits about what they were doing in the war. One particular soldier springs to mind, and he was actually dismantling the mines. And he would speak about doing that and how frightening it was. And I don't know what happened to him. I have no idea whether he made it home or not. And that was, you know, pretty distressing, really, to read about.
Did you read into any of the letters from some of the people that wrote to you a romantic interest of sorts?
Oh, definitely. Yes, that was a wonderful part of it. Yeah, because they did consider, some of them considered that I was their girl sort of thing, you know, because as I say, I was only 18, 19 at the time, and it was incredibly romantic. I mean, there were some very handsome gentlemen that sent me the photographs, and I'm a bit of a sucker for an American accent. I find it, you know, very attractive. And some of the soldiers, I mean, they weren't only soldiers, they were Air Force and Navy, and some of them actually came over to visit, you know, when they were on R&R. Some of them turned up over here, and my parents were very understanding, and they put them up, you know, and we took them out and about and showed them the sights, and we had a wonderful time.
Lynn, the reason that I became aware of you writing to American servicemen in Vietnam was an announcement that was aired on AFVN Da Nang in 1969.
Yeah.
Where the announcer, Alan Moore, gave your name and address over the air for American servicemen who are interested in a pen pal to write down and correspond with you.
Yeah.
I have a recording of that that you obviously have never heard, because it has only been broadcast once, and that was in 1969 in Vietnam.
Wow.
Listen to this from decades ago.
Bluebirds sing their magic song. We will love the sun alone.
That's Green Grass, Gary Lewis and the Playboys with Boss Gould on AFVN. And I promised you an address of an English pen pal. Okay, here it is. You can write to her. Her name is Lynn Watkinson. W-A-T-K-I-N-S-O-N. My first name, of course, L-Y-N-N. And she's 18 years old. And she lives at 12 Gaunt Way. G-A-U-N-T. W-A-Y. In Sheffield. S-H-E-F-F-I-E-L-D, and then there's two other designators here, S-14 and 1-G-Y, Yorkshire, England, or should I say Yorkshire? Well, anyhow, Y-O-R-K-S-H-I-R-E, England. You got it now? That's Lynn Watkinson, 12 Gaunt Way, Sheffield, S-14, 1-G-Y, Yorkshire, England. Write her today and tell her you heard it on It's What's Happening right here on AFVN Da Nang.
AFVN, man, it's really fun.
Now 22 minutes till lunchtime and 12 noon. This is Michelle Lee. She's got a message to L. David Sloan.
David Sloan, leave me alone.
How about that, Lynn?
Wow, that was a blast from the past. That was really awesome. Thank you.
1969.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I was 19 again.
Well, Lynn Watkinson, your correspondence with the American servicemen in Vietnam, I am certain, meant so much to them in keeping their morale up and bringing a sense of happiness to a very unhappy place.
Well, I like to think so.
And for that, I want to say thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
You didn't write to me then. I was born in 1965. I was probably just learning how to write. But thank you for what you did.
Oh, thank you very much.
Once those American boys get near you, take good care of your home.
That's Sound Power by Pretty Pet Clark. Number 17 on the All-American Power Poll Playlist.
You know the once those American boys get near you, take good care of your home.
Howdy out there. I'm Navy Hospital Corpsman First Class Jim Mayton. You know the post office isn't a supply nor a transportation unit, but you'd be surprised how many people try to use it as such. The APO ships free personal correspondence back to the world, not military equipment. This includes weapons, boots, fatigues, poncho, liners, jeeps, tanks, and UH-1E helicopters. Most of these things can be bought from any surplus store in the States. It costs money to transport this equipment to Vietnam in the first place. Let's leave it here where it can do somebody some good. Besides, where would you put a stamp or an address on a UH-1E helicopter?
Entertaining. Music-minded. Informative. Swinging. The American Forces Vietnam Network. Four little words, but they signify over 6 years of broadcasting service to American servicemen in Vietnam.
Army Specialist Rick Bednar. You can hear him weekday evenings on that chicken kicking show from the American Forces Vietnam Network. My OIC just walked in and he says, "You little rascal, Simons. You know, there's still a ray of hope left for you."
Going to do it for another Fantabulous Gold Radio program. It's What's Happening, Phase Number 2 for I Corps. Marine Corporal Harry Simon has been with you. And we do want to remind you that Monday, tomorrow night at 2100, we're going to do the whole thing all over again. So don't you go away, because we're going to put out those boss sounds to you. The American Forces Vietnam Network at 8096-337, drawer 40. Ladies and gentlemen, get those cards and letters in today, because Boss Radio plays what you say. Until tomorrow night at 2100, Harry Simon saying,
see ya!
Is the Now Sound, Boss 85, AFVN Da Nang.
Now, another
another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Chicken Man!
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
Well, in our last exciting episode, during a lull in weekend crime fighting, the wonderful white-winged warrior was standing on a street corner singing to himself,
"Give my regards to Broadway, remember me to Herald Square."
When a talent scout for a big Midland City nightclub passed by and hearing the feathered fighter's wonderful voice, hired him on the spot as a part-time nightclub performer.
$20 a weekend.
Well, this surprised the feathered fighter a lot. And later, backstage at the nightclub,
"Give my regards to Broadway."
The Fantastic Fowl quickly places a phone call to the office of the police commissioner of Midland City.
"Hello, this is the commissioner's office.
Miss Helfinger, this is the Winged Warrior."
"Yes, Winged Warrior."
"Would you please inform the commissioner, Miss Helfinger, that in the event of an emergency, he can reach me at the Club Chi Chi, where I'll be singing 'Give My Regards to Broadway.'" "Yes, Miss Helfinger."
"Commissioner, the Winged Warrior's on the line, and I have a message for you."
"Go ahead."
"In the event of an emergency, you can reach him at the Club Chi Chi."
"At the Club Chi Chi."
"Where he'll be singing 'Give My Regards to Broadway.'"
"Where he'll be singing 'Give My Regards to Broadway.'" Miss Helfinger."
"You bet."
"Do you think the Winged Warrior is trying to tell us something?"
"I wouldn't be surprised."
"Could be a secret code message."
"Could be."
"Miss Helfinger, say then to the Winged Warrior what is happening at the Club Chi Chi."
"Right. Winged Warrior."
"Yes."
"What's happening at the Club Chi Chi?"
"Well, right now the band is playing a cha-cha, and there's a very attractive girl dancing on the table."
"All right."
"She seems to be attracting a lot of attention."
"Yes. Commissioner."
"Yes, Miss Helfinger."
"The band is playing the cha-cha, and a girl is dancing on a table."
"I suppose that girl is attracting a lot of attention."
"Yep."
"Miss Helfinger, say this then to the Winged Warrior. What is the name of the girl dancing on the table?"
"Winged Warrior."
"Yes."
"What's the name of the girl dancing on the table?"
Just a moment. Pardon me, give me the name of the young lady dancing on the table, sir. Oh, thank you. Miss Helfinger."
"I'm ready."
"Her name is Cheryl."
"Cheryl?"
"Choo-choo."
"Choo-choo?"
"Cheryl Choo-choo, that's right."
"Commissioner."
"Yes."
"Her name is Cheryl Choo-choo."
"Ah, yes, then the complete message reads, Cheryl Choo-choo is dancing the cha-cha at the Chi-Chi. Miss Helfinger?"
"Uh-huh."
"Does that message mean anything to you?"
"Uh-uh."
"Well, does Chicken Man's mama know he's catching Choo-choo doing the cha-cha at the Chi-Chi? And moreover, if Chicken Man needs to be trained in doing 'Give My Regards to Broadway' cha-cha, can Choo-choo train?" Be listening tomorrow for another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Ron Scott enlisted in the U.S. Air Force before the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and the subsequent escalation of America's involvement in Vietnam. Ron, when did you enlist?
January 1962.
So that was really before Vietnam. We weren't actively engaged yet.
We were just barely getting into it at that time.
Did you have an expectation in 1962 when you enlisted that you'd be sent to Southeast Asia?
No, not really, because when I enlisted, I come to find out my training was going to be in jet aircraft over four engines. Now, how many jet aircraft do we have over four engines?
The only one I can think of is the B-52.
And at that time, the B-47 had six.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't last long, but yeah, so you can just say the B-52.
So what did you do on the B-52s?
No, I was a crew chief on the B-52s, both over there and over here.
And where were you based when you were in Vietnam?
Guam, usually. No, Guam. We didn't have any bases over there that had handled the B-52. We did spend a lot of time in Utapau in Thailand, which is right at the southern part of Thailand.
You say you were based in Guam. Was that official cover, but you were really operating out of Thailand?
We eventually came to operate out of Thailand. Up until that time, we were flying out of Guam. We weren't based in Guam. It was a temporary assignment from Texas to Guam. That's where most of the bombing and stuff came from, was ferried across out of Guam. And then when we got Utapau finally finished and upward would hold our aircraft, then they'd go ahead and flew some up the up there. Because you're talking a lot of weight. By the time
and from Guam, you're talking a lot of distance.
Yeah, but that was the best shot for us then. But you got to remember, B-52, when it's fully loaded with bombs under the wingtip and in the bomb bay, full load of fuel, you're getting up over 400,000 pounds. You're knocking on 500,000 pounds.
Once your squadron relocated out of Guam into Thailand, were you operating bombing runs on North Vietnam out of Thailand?
Not the majority of it. The majority of it continued to come out of Guam.
Your role as crew chief, Ron, were you primarily in charge of that aircraft on the ground or when it was airborne?
Yes.
Both, huh? How many of the bombing runs did you accompany then, percentage-wise?
Sometimes we go for a month, never get on board the airplane. Sometimes it would be daily. Well, every other day. It would just depend. I mean, we didn't... And it, let me back up and make sure that I made myself clear. The when I say on board, the aircraft commander of the B-52, he's in charge of the airplane. That's his baby. The ground crew members, usually the crew chiefs, it was up to them to, whether on the ground or in the air, to make sure it kept trying to fly, no matter what.
Do you remember listening to Hanoi Hannah on the radio?
Yes. She was big. Now, that's one we did listen to when we were upstairs, when we were flying. Because she always came in so clear. Once we got up higher in the altitude, she'd come across great. And we listened to her a lot for the entertainment. We'd laugh at a lot of stuff. She was taking it serious, putting out as serious propaganda. We knew that was all a bunch of junk. But one thing I would like to know is where did she get her information? A lot of stuff she used was point on. She knew. It always puzzled us. She would be able to tell where some of the flights, she would be able to tell the world, supposedly, where they were going. And that's where they were going.
Some of her announcements were the destinations before you even got there?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
That's why I always wanted to know, who's her source and why are they allowing this to happen?
What kind of things do you remember Hanoi Hannah telling you over the radio?
Usually just different troop movements and stuff like that. Where you were going to be, what you had waiting for you. It was just all propaganda. That's all it was. That's why we listened to her when we were flying up there, so we could get a good laugh. I mean, when you're in the air, 10, 12 hours, it gets to be boring. And until you start getting a lot of SAM traffic, that wakes you up real, real quick. But other than that, you know, there's nothing up there.
Now, a lot of her information was accurate.
Very accurate. That's what irritates me so much. Extremely accurate.
But if you were laughing at what she was saying, how could that be effective? You're dismissing it as humor.
The guys on the ground who were in the mud and the paddies and all this crap, they weren't so sure that she was lying.
Do you think Hanoi Hannah had a big impact on the Americans in Southeast Asia?
No, not really. They had it, you know, she had some impact. I know she irritated a lot of them.
Well, Ron Scott, thank you for your service.
Thank you very much.
Army Specialist Bob Moorcook, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
What years were you in Vietnam, Bob?
I arrived in May of 1972 and left March of 1973.
Now, March of 73 was when the American forces pulled out. Were you there at that pullout?
Yes, I was. Officially, I was on the plane just after the last plane left.
Let me think that one through. You were on the plane just after the last plane that left.
Yes.
How's
some
that?
Some folks were delayed. All of the troops were withdrawn, but there were still a large number of military people who were assigned to the embassy. And so officially they weren't troops, but obviously we were wearing the American uniform. And I was supposed to stay on and assist the station that was a successor to AFVN, called ARS, and was there one extra day and got a phone call and said, "You're out of here." So I left the day after the troops officially left.
Why did they have you stay behind?
They came around to all of us who were at AFVN, and they said they needed two people. They were looking for two volunteers who were willing to stay behind, who would be willing to train the civilians that were going to take over AFVN. And myself and one other fellow, we volunteered to be on the rear guard.
And what kind of training were you giving those contractors?
Mostly it was voice training. They were engineers, and they were scared of microphones. Now, they weren't scared to take them apart or touch them. They were afraid to talk into them. And so I was teaching them how to talk into a microphone and not be afraid of it.
And those engineers were civilian contractors, not military personnel, correct?
That's correct. They were with an outfit that went by the initials PA&E for Pacific Architects and Engineers. And they were the guys who came in and took over the station and renamed it from American Forces Vietnam Network to American Radio Service, going by the initials ARS.
And why do you suppose the American government was so interested in having a radio station there when the troops were gone?
Well, there's still the need to communicate. It's still a way of saying there is still an American presence that might provide some reassurance to the Vietnamese and the community. And also, even though the troops were all withdrawn, there were a large number of troops that were reassigned from MACV, which would have been Military Assistance Command Vietnam, to being somehow connected to the embassy.
Tell us a little bit about what you said on television reporting to the remaining Americans that the war was over.
I don't recall exactly what I said when the final papers were signed, but I do recall about two, maybe 3 weeks earlier, getting very excited and writing my own lead for a story. For radio news, or TV news, I forget which would have been unusual to write my own leads, but it was, "Henry Kissinger arrived in Saigon today carrying documents that could spell the end to the Vietnam War." And feeling very excited about that. That was an exciting moment in my life and for everybody who was there and wanting to go home. Another story that was as big in my mind, and maybe even bigger, was the release of the POWs. And that took place just shortly, you know, about 6 or 8 weeks prior to the shutdown of the station. And so we were covering that with a lot of attention. There was a lot of excitement about that.
You have a website, a blog, and it services members of the American Forces Vietnam Network. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, yes, I can. In fact, we've got three resources on the Internet right now. One of them, and I want to be sure to give credit to Jim White here, is our web page that's found on the net at afenvets.net. And there we've got many, many documents regarding our history and ways for members to stay in touch with each other. We've also got a group on Yahoo Groups area, called AFEN, and lots of the guys have signed up there, and this is a way that we can swap the emails with each other, and I'm pleased and proud to be the guy who got that started. And we've also got a Facebook page as well for AFEN vets, and I've been managing that. So we've got three different resources on the Internet right now where folks who are interested in AFEN can learn more, or where our vets, as we find them, can sign up and find their buddies again.
Bob Moorcook, thank you for your service.
Thank you, and thank you, Harry, for your service. It's great to be home. Welcome home, Harry.
Thank you very much. It's been an awful long time.
The system is very go. With radio, go, go. Swinging VN Radio Rock.
All-American Sound Power going out to the grooviest girl in the world, and it's got to be Ann. Let's hear it. Hooray. Girl in the World and Boss Radio. In between records here, I'm probably out of breath a little bit, but I've been running outside trying to start this goofy little truck that we have for a friend of mine. I don't know. If this truck gets much older, we're going to have to start issuing it upper and lower plates both.
The Pace Center for I-Corps. Here's Harry Simons.
With the power of music.
The greatest love I have ever known at 9:32.
Heaven only knows that I wish I could. Mm-hmm. That's the greatest love.
In the midst of a happening from the American Forces Vietnam Network, Marine Corporal Harry Simons, and a pleasure to be here.
Are you constantly bothered by the noise of barking dogs? That noise you hear may be your feet clamoring for a little better care. If your boots restrain or cramp your toes, don't hesitate to get new ones. Contact your supply sergeant. It's his job to keep you well supplied. Shoes that are too small do nothing but damage your feet. So give your dogs a little more room. You'll find it's much quieter.
More music! Pow! Pow! Power!
Mendocino time!
Douglas Quintet is back. We'd like to thank all of our beautiful friends all over the country for all the beautiful vibrations. We love you.
We'll be right back with the dramatic ending to AFBN's radio station in Vietnam and the critical role it played in the evacuation of Americans just prior to the fall of Saigon. That's an interesting story that you should stay another 7 minutes to hear. But before we tell that final chapter of AFBN, please allow us a moment to thank the people who helped make this documentary possible. Harry, do you have some closing thoughts?
Well, Mike, this documentary evolved into a much larger production than either one of us could have imagined since first discussing playing the AFBN programs on WEBY. Would you agree?
Definitely. The final product is much different than the original concept, but it's much better.
Well, and there's a reason for that. And it's because of your love for your country. In my opinion, your commanding knowledge of our country's history, an emotional appreciation for our military, and with all of those qualities, you are able to recognize the significance of the American Forces Vietnam Network after simply just sampling these surviving tapes. Is that somewhat accurate?
Well, certainly about the emotional appreciation part. I'd be lying if I said that my eyes stayed dry throughout this production. Because they didn't. I shed tears hearing veterans tell stories of their service. Some of the tales they told were of absolute horror. And some were of absolute heroism. And yeah, it took an emotional toll. But it was worth it.
Well, therefore, in my former official capacity as the ambassador of the state of Maine to the United States Marine Corps, and on behalf of all Vietnam veterans, I thank you for your service.
Well, I don't think I did a whole lot, but you're welcome.
Additionally, one of the reasons that this documentary grew as it did is because of the Vietnam veterans that took such an interest in sharing so many of their recollections with us in preparing and putting together this program. Had it not been for their willingness to speak to those memories, this program would not have been possible. The same applies to the AFBN staffers that provided very significant input to this documentary through their interviews. What I could provide in programming to this documentary, Mike, was just simply a small snapshot. I wish we could have connected with so many more of the AFBN program hosts and disc jockeys and have included their programming as well, but it just simply wasn't available. You know, Mike, American radio broadcasting in Vietnam, it spanned over a period of 13 years. And I was only there for 18 months. What I could provide in programming to this documentary was only a small snapshot. So finally, I would like to thank all of those that served with AFBN. Truly, everyone gave their heart and soul.
I'd like to give special thanks to WEBY producers Anthony Daughtry, Joey Wallace, and Sean Nicholson for editing. I know it was a lot of hard work and a lot of late night hours in the production room, but the final product sounds great. To Bob Shear for audio processing, thank you. Bob, you do a lot more than just processing audio, but if I thanked you for everything you do, I'd have to add another hour to this documentary just to list what you've done for us. Thanks go to Melissa Odom of Associated Court Reporters for transcription services. The editing of our interviews would have been impossible without your thorough and accurate transcripts. Thank you to Kimberly Bates for your assistance in writing the narrative of this program. Your second drafts always found a better way to say it than my first drafts did. Thanks to Harry's sister, Sue Farrington, for your research assistance. And of course, thank you for keeping careful possession of Harry's reel-to-reel tapes for many decades. Had you not cared for them as you did, their precious contents would have been lost. Thanks to John Cologne for your encouragement during the lengthy process of taking this documentary from concept to completion. Thanks to Ryan Pettigrew, the archivist at the Richard Nixon Presidential Library, who found the other lost Nixon tape for us. Harry Simons, I'd like to give you a special thanks for your assistance in research, writing, production, and co-hosting this documentary with me. And of course, thanks for recording the AFVN programs when you were in Vietnam. Their value as a national historical treasure is significant. I want to thank all the Vietnam veterans who participated in this documentary by granting interviews. It was your stories, your memories, and your honest emotions that brought these recorded moments of history to life. And thank you to our sponsors. I'd like to ask that you thank our sponsors as well. They support our veterans, and they saw the value in this story being told. This tribute to our Vietnam veterans was made possible by Milton Dodge, Joe Patty Seafood, Gulf Power, The Retirement Planners, and Penn Air Federal Credit Union. And last, but definitely not least, I extend my utmost appreciation to all who have worn the uniform of the United States military. Whether you served in Vietnam, other conflicts, or only in times of peace, the fact that you put on that uniform and swore that oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies is deserving of respect and thanks from all Americans. Thank you. I'm Mike Bates. Thanks for listening. Now, we'll close with one more fascinating interview. Colonel Greg Daddis is a professor in the Department of History at the United States Military Academy at West Point. He chairs the American History Division and has written several books on the Vietnam War. Colonel, the American military ran the radio station in Saigon, as well as the network affiliates throughout the country, as the American Forces Vietnam Network.
Mm-hmm.
And for nearly the last 10 hours, we've been playing excerpts from that programming. We've been interviewing the people who produced it. We've been interviewing the people who listened to it. In 1973, the American Forces left.
Mm-hmm.
And the radio station remained, but it was no longer run by the military. It was run by civilians with the Pacific Architects and Engineering firm. So in April of 1975, it was very clear that South Vietnam was going to fall. Saigon was going to fall. The AM radio station had long since shut down, and they shipped the equipment off to other Armed Forces Radio Television Service locations. But an FM radio station remained in Saigon. It was a 100,000-watt FM run by civilian contractors. What role did that radio station play as the fall of Saigon approached?
Yeah, there's a really interesting story that is told in a work by Larry Engelman called Tears Before the Rain, and it's a collection of oral histories that speak to these final moments as South Vietnam is falling. And one of them is from an Armed Forces radio operator, Chuck Neal, and he talks about working at one of these stations that's off of the embassy itself. There is a recognition among Americans and Vietnamese as well that the end is fairly well nigh, that North Vietnamese forces have yet again tried for a decisive battlefield victory, and in the spring of 1975, it seems like they're making gains that are just not going to be reversed as province after province begins to fall. And so the radio station earlier in 1974 started having discussions about how best to put the word out to this disparate group of Americans that are in and around Saigon that if South Vietnam was in fact going to fall and Americans needed to be evacuated, how best were they going to achieve that evacuation? So most Americans would listen to what was now called American Radio Service, and so the the folks that were now associated with the American Radio Service decided that they would use the service itself as a way to get the word out that American evacuation had begun. So it's a really interesting story that this one operator, Chuck Neal, tells of having a discussion. He comes up with this idea of maybe playing something on the radio that every American will be able to understand. And there's a belief that it's going to be, you know, in the spring or the middle of the summer. So somebody suggests, well, why not play I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas? Now, Neal recounts that he's thinking of the Bing Crosby, the famous Bing Crosby rendition. But the only thing that they could find was a recording from Tennessee Ernie Ford. So Neal recounts the story of taping the Tennessee Ernie Ford rendition of the song, and then immediately after the song is played, he announces the temperature in Saigon is 105 degrees and rising. Neal would play the tape, and that would be the signal for Americans to move to their evacuation points. And in fact, that's exactly what happened, that in the very final days of April, Neal gets a call from the defense attaché office letting them know that the American evacuation needs to begin. Within the station, there's this big automatic program player, and Neal puts in the tape, plays the song and his final words. And as Neal says, that was his final act at the radio station before he himself moved to one of the evacuation points.
So Chuck Neal evacuates from the embassy grounds on a helicopter, and he's now out of the country. But this tape is still running, right? This automatic machine is playing this song over and over and over again, correct?
Right. So after Chuck Neal flies out to the USS Hancock, which is an American aircraft carrier off the coast of South Vietnam, the following day, which is the 30th of April, he's listening to the radio, and he actually hears his own voice.
And White Christmas is playing.
And White Christmas is playing.
Wow. Colonel Dattis, thank you for your service.
All right, thank you very much for having me.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your day be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be
1330 WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio.